The Nutty Bites Podcast is geek certified by the Geek Out with Mainframe Podcast. I mean, you're listening to it. You know it's good.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. Welcome to a special combined episode of Nutty Bites and Epic with an exclamation point. Hi, I'm Tech, and I am a gargantuan nerd, and I have Nutty here.
Hello.
And from S&T Geotronics, I have our special guests today, Mark and James. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, I'm here. Hey, how are y'all?
Mark and James are the creators of an open source, open hardware Enigma code machine that is currently the center of a highly successful Kickstarter campaign. With 22 days to go, they are $9,000 over goal. So congratulations, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So we'll start with the first question. What is Enigma?
Well, an Enigma is an encryption device. The original ones were an electromechanical device that was used to encrypt messages for commerce and industry. And then World War II came along, and the Germans grabbed it and used it to send secret messages in the field and upgraded it several times during the war to try to keep ahead of everybody. And ours is not an electromechanical device. It's purely an electronic computer device.
But why create a replica of an Enigma machine? Like, what is it about Enigma? I mean, it's a 70-year-old code, 80-year-old code now. What fascinates us so much about this, and why not like a Lorenz machine or a Purple Code or all the other really fascinating crypto from World War II?
Well, in our case, it's an accident, really. We were planning a geocaching event, and decided that at the end of the event, it would be cool to have the participant required to decode a cryptic message, and discussing the different possibilities. A friend suggested, well, why don't you get an Enigma machine? And we looked around to find one. There was none available, and decided we should build our own, and started the process of getting an Arduino and wiring it manually and writing the code and publish an instructable on the internet, not thinking that there'd be much interest. But if anybody else out there wants to build his own, there's the recipe. And we instantly, within 24 hours, we had 15,000 views, a whole slew of people asking us if we could please produce a printed circuit board. And from then, it became we offered the board, we offered the kit, and decided to offer it as a finished product as well.
Really, by popular demand, we made boards, and people, yeah, well, that's cool. You have a board. Can you send us one that's, you know, got the components already on it? I'm not good at soldering. Well, okay, sure, we can do that, sure. And pretty soon, well, I'm not good at assembling anything. How about a whole one? And one thing led to another, and pretty soon the first functioning unit shipped out, and we've been building a few of them.
Years ago, a friend of mine and I had found a Java applet online that simulated an Enigma coding machine, and the two of us, using our work emails, sent all of our plans for Christmas vacation back and forth in Enigma, called it Operation Drunken Reindeer. I'm sure whoever was snooping on our emails, I'm sure they were quite confused, but it was really, really an enjoyable time.
Well, for the listeners of Nutty Bites, they already know this fellow as the Zero Killer. And I do remember some of those plans were done in public chat rooms. And there was one guy going, I know you're using Enigma, but I have no idea your cipher, so I have no idea what you're saying.
The guy had also opened up the Java applet, and he's trying to guess the Stecker pairs that we had picked so that he could try to decrypt the cipher. It was nerd fun, but so cool. I noticed on your project that you guys are open source and open hardware on this. Why is that important to you guys?
Well, open source is the way to go, because we don't believe that necessarily closed source has been totally responsible with everything. For example, the Windows operating system is closed source, and it catches viruses and gets sick and has lots of problems. And you have a bunch of wonderful Linux operating systems, which are open source. And by nature, they don't get sick with viruses. They work well. If it doesn't do exactly what you want it to, you're welcome to modify it so that it does do exactly what you want it to.
Hang on, I'm sorry. The Linux box does not get sick, but apparently your partner does.
Yes, indeed. I'm on the letter.
He's actually on an upswing. He got hit with something bad. I don't know where it came from, but he's 90% better than he was yesterday.
So yeah, so open source and open hardware is part of our philosophy. It's one of our core values because we feel that we enjoy it as makers in everything we do. So we figured it's a good way to give back and to get a community involved and participate in a better good kind of thing.
You know, and over the course of history, lots of good things have rolled out of the American garage, and but we've looked at the maker fairs and the maker community, and we see a lot of real strength in people helping each other. And if you open source something, you're going to get help that you never anticipated. You know, you'll get beta testers that say, hey, there's this little flaw, and how come it doesn't do this, and could you do that? It's a wonderful way to do stuff. It drags stuff out in the open. It takes away controls that people like to put on things. In the garage, I have an electric vehicle that we're fixing to open source. I've already given pretty much most of the details of how the basic drive works, but we're going to do an open source electric vehicle drive, probably a small one suitable for like a motorcycle and then a larger one suitable for like a small, medium-sized car.
You guys are just the right guys for our audience. Our audience they're very big on open source, and I'm just loving everything you're saying.
So while you've been making this thing, and I love the maker movement, and the whole open source thing. I come from the flight simulator community, and a lot of the work that I've been doing, I've relied on open source beta testers to help me with my projects. I'm trying to recreate the CF-105 Aero and make it fly inside a computer realistic to the numbers. It's been a hard year. It's been a lot of hard math and a lot of hard research and books, but I couldn't do it without the help of the open source community that you can find at xplane.org. Ding. But so as you guys have been going through this project and building this Enigma machine, like, what's the biggest challenge been? What sort of unexpected did you guys come across?
Oh, let's see. The first gyration of the code, the challenge was the way that I designed the code to actually process the information in encrypt returned bogus numbers because the numbers would get out of range on me because the way the Enigma process works is you go through a rotor and you go in as a value and you come out as a different value. And but to index the rotor, I simply choose my entry point by adding and subtracting from the number I'm putting in. And I was returning numbers that were way out in the far left field and trying to figure out how did I get here. And because in the Enigma, you do a process and then you go through a reflector and then you basically undo the process that you just did with different values. So, and to wrap my head around the whole process and figure it out was the biggest challenge. But other than that, it was actually pretty simple.
In the case of the Enigma, it's the challenge is definitely software. The hardware was really simple with the Arduino doing all of the heavy lifting. All we're having is a few resistors and a few LEDs and a bunch of buttons kind of thing. There was not much of a challenge there. But software-wise, and the decision had to be made at the very beginning if we were going to play with substrings and do alpha manipulations or if it was going to be a numerical. And it ended up being all math. And James decided to set it up in arrays and matrices. So it makes the software look kind of alien, but it's all in the math. and to get the map to arrive exactly at the right number and the right behavior kind of thing to translate it back to the encrypted character was a real challenge.
It took the course of about two evenings, and of course Mark was away when I was sitting there poring over the code, and I'd call him up, Mark, I need you to transpose this table of numbers, because I'm not, there's some things I'm not particularly good at physically doing, and typing numbers into the keyboard that I'm reading from a chart, the way my tickiness works is extremely difficult. Mark can look at the table of numbers and type. Okay, I'm done, next. And so he's typing them into his computer, and he's sending me an email, and I cut the table out of his email and pasted it into the program, and it was pretty hair-raising there for a little bit.
You know, it's amazing. It's an 80-year-old machine that works by rotating wheels, and it takes tables of math and code to recreate it in a computer. I mean, isn't it bizarre that it takes so much technology to recreate a mechanical device that's 80 years old?
Absolutely.
You know, the clockworks is a thing that we really kind of have lost now that we have computers and stuff like that. And a clock with gears and everything is basically a mechanical computer. And all we're doing is making a mathematical representation of what a mechanical machine did.
So what's next for you guys? I mean, you're already over goal. You still got 3 weeks to go. Have you thought of any stretch goals? Are you working on, you mentioned your electric car. Are there any other projects?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So first of all, regarding this Kickstarter, we've got a $50,000 stretch goal where we intend to release some software enhancements, get our M4 to behave like a Telex machine, be fully M3 compatible, allow the user to actually use the stretch board, the plug board, as a physical device instead of the current implementation, which is all via software. And we have if we reach that 50,000 level, we have our goal is really to raise $80,000 or $90,000 with this Kickstarter project. So we have another stretch goal in the 75 range, where if we can get to that level, we're probably going to be sending everybody that contributed a flash drive containing all of the INO source code and PDF and documentations and scans of our diagrams and graphics that we created along the project. But this Kickstarter really, for us, is a proof of concept, and it's to launch our company so we can do other things. And Enigma will continue to be a product we support and we love and enhance, but watch out for next Instructable and next Kickstarter that are coming. And indeed, the electric car, the open source electric car is in the pipeline along with a few other projects in between before we can get to that car.
We're working on a laser maze, which is actually a video game that you'll actually get in and do the Ethan Hunt thing through the lasers and booby traps and stuff to achieve your goal sort of deal. We have other products on our website for geocaching that we may kickstart at one point or a time, depending on how we feel about it. This is just our first Kickstarter, our first try at it. The Enigma was a very cool device. Some people send us mail and say, oh, why do you want to encrypt something or do an encrypting device that was broken, you know, 70 years ago? Well, there's still a German message out there that they're using shared computing to try to decrypt. All right?
Because it's cool.
Absolutely.
And there are still a couple messages out there that haven't been decrypted, and they're using shared computing, for God's sake, to try to break. So probably it was a pretty good little key that they had.
Hundreds of computers working together to solve a math problem made by a machine full of whirling disks.
Exactly. Absolutely. Well, that's cool.
It is. It's totally cool. And I think one important thing to remember here is the reason why they were able to break the Enigma code and other codes in World War II is not because the machine failed, but because of human error.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It was the process and the behavior of the humans that were using them that made it a flaw.
Now, you see, this here is Dude. He's a really old Dell Latitude computer running Linux. And he can crack a web key in under 15 minutes, and he's not an exceptional piece of computing hardware. It's not because the web key itself is bad. It's not because Dude is a particularly smart computer. It's the implementation of how web works, where they damn near share the key in the open. You know, he collects IVs, and he compares this to that, and he figures out all the things that possibly cannot be, and he tests the very few remaining keys, and he says, aha, that's the key. And that's why we have WPA now, is because WEP is broke. And by the same token, the Enigma was broke by the way the Germans formatted their message, and that's how it got broke. Alan Turing made him a crypto bomb. He figured out everything that it possibly could be, and then tested the remaining keys until he found it. And he said, you know, and that's a big point I have, that a lot of people are going to be mad with what I'm going to say, because a lot of people think that they're not worthy and that Alan Turing is the father of modern computing. And yeah, he is kind of, but they're not looking at it correctly. Alan Turing was the first true computer hacker. He took a system and cracked it. And that's the whole point, is he found an efficient, effective means of coming to an end. You know, and that's why we're open source, is because we want everybody to hack our software and make it better.
I agree 100%. This is just awesome. For the listeners at home, both Tech and myself are just nodding our head as you're speaking. It's just absolutely. And by the way, Dude being the name of your laptop there is fantastic.
I need to ask one more question. Where can people find you? And then I will break some bad news to you both, but... Where can people?
All right. Well, we're based in Columbus, Georgia, 2 hours south of Atlanta, on the border of Alabama. We'll be next week, as a matter of fact, 7 days from now, in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the International Charlotte Cryptology Symposium, where we have a short talk on this Open Enigma and the Kickstarter project. We are reachable via our website, stgeotronics.com.
And all of those links will be in the show notes, as well as links to the Kickstarter, which has already met your goal.
Well, it met, our
first goal.
Right? The danger with Kickstarter, as opposed to Indiegogo or some other crowdfunding platform, is if you come a dollar short, or $1,000 short, it don't matter, you get zero, and you owe nothing to any of the backers. So in order, because this is our first Kickstarter, and we didn't know the reception we were going to get with the community, we decided to play safe and have a target that should be easily reachable. And indeed, within 8 days, 9 days, we met our 20,000. But again, the truth be told is we're looking for 80,000 out of this, and we think we're going to get it.
That's fantastic. Now, a little backstory for the listeners. I'm sitting here in the office in the studio one day, and Tech comes running up. Nutty, you got to look at this. Look, somebody's building Enigma machines. We can't quite back it to the level of getting one built, but I need a t-shirt at least. And he's got all excited, and I looked at it, and I said, this is really cool. I said, they haven't met their goal. How long do they have to the end? Oh, contact them. Let's see if we can get them on the show, which he did. So we have, before today, never really spoken to either of you, whereas a lot of times our guests, we have had a past relationship. So this is just completely random. Tech went and he set this all up because he was so passionate about it. And then by the time we were able to get everything scheduled and get you guys on, you met your goal. And I was so happy when I found that out.
So I
thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you guys. This is a wonderful project. I'm going to ask a completely selfish question now. My t-shirt, when you send it, could you guys sign it?
Oh, absolutely. But of course, absolutely. And, don't be surprised if it comes in a bigger box than it should. So,
merci beaucoup. Thank you both.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Dad.
We need to record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics because, as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
Twotruefreaks.com. Hey Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
We're going to talk, we're going to move on to the other part of the talk now, where we're just going to geekily debate cryptography stories.
Okay. How would you like to start it?
I'd
this
like
is
to
all
start,
your show.
Well, it is my show, and I'm going to drop the big bomb, and I'm going to steal the one that's on everybody's mind, because I'm going to say the best cryptography story ever is Bletchley Park. Alan Turing and the rest of his eggheads who sat in dark rooms looking at weird pieces of paper with a bunch of letters on them and said, huh, somehow this is in German. And then they would go, oh, look, and they're going to attack Moscow. And then, wait, I can do this faster by making a bunch of world machines on a big board. Let's call it Colossus. And what comes out the other end? German! We win the war! Da-da, nerds do it! Or what do they call them? Boffins. The British term for a geek is a boffin, but it doesn't have that negative pocket protector connotation that it does in the States. A boffin is a techno guru, a good guy, the guys that win the wars.
A squint,
exactly.
Well, Tech, you know, Alan Turing was a very interesting man of many dimensions. You know that he was training for the Olympic marathon at one point.
Oh, was he?
I didn't know that.
He was a very amazing person. There's some people that have some things derogatory to say about him, of course, but
regarding his sex life.
Yeah, I guess. But you know, we're in the modern age, and you know, I have a wife and a daughter, and those that's the path I chose. But we need to be in an age where, you know, we just people are going to do what they're going to do, and everybody else needs to get used to it.
Thank you.
Yes. Absolutely. And his personal life aside, it had absolutely zero bearing on the work that he did.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So absolutely.
But he's
and it took 70 years for people to realize that, yeah. You know, that he was a hero.
Yes.
Still is.
You know?
Yeah.
One of mine.
He's a hero for many communities. And since we're speaking about Bletchley Park, I was doing a little reading recently. There's a TV series called Bletchley Park. I got all excited. Sorry, Bletchley Circle. I got all excited. I was like, oh, they did a series about code breaking in World War II. And I got Tech to come in and watch. No, it's about code breakers 10 years after the war and what they're doing with their lives now. So there's maybe 15, 20 minutes of actual code breaking footage in there, and it's kind of neat. But I was doing some research, and one of the things that I saw was when they were setting it up, they were saying, leave no stone unturned, get everybody that you possibly can think of. We need brains in here. We need brains in here. And when Winston Churchill came to visit, he took a look around and he saw all the women working there and said, when I said leave no stone unturned, I didn't think you'd take it literally. So Bletchley Park is also pretty forward in the feminist movement because
well, it was indeed.
You've got these brilliant minds, these women working on codes, and there were so many of them.
Yeah, that's true.
That's absolutely true.
There's a lot of people that underestimate women and underuse women and unfortunately underpay a lot of women, and it's something that society one day is gonna come to terms with. You know, change happens slowly. You know, there's a lot of very capable women out there. There's a lot of women that served in the army with me, and I think that they were promoted slower than men were, and for different reasons, and that was just wrong. And there's a lot of women out there that serve in the forces that are indeed heroes. That it's just something that this world's going to have to deal with eventually.
Amen. All right.
I know, Nutty, well, one of your heroes in the early computing world
oh, yeah.
also served in the military. If we talk about Rear Admiral Grace Hopper.
Absolutely.
Inventor of the phrase debugging when...
Because it was a moth.
Because it was a moth stuck in the computer.
Find a moth.
Yeah. They had to go in and rip out, so...
Well, I'm from the 3rd Infantry Division, and, you know, we have a sledgehammer and all that, and we call it a technical tap.
Absolutely. I'm in the Royal Canadian Electrical Mechanical Engineers, pretty much the same thing as the Ordnance Corps in the United States, and... manual force applicators, also known as
kinetic energy device.
Kinetic energy transfer devices, absolutely. Will solve a lot of problems. We have stoves that we have to destroy before we throw them in the bin. So we have our technical stamp, which is a 9-pound maul. So can you go ahead and stamp that stove for me?
Oh, yeah. At the company, I secured some hard drives for disposal with a 3-pound hammer.
There you go. Secured.
That works. That works. One more thing about Grace Hopper is my niece is, I think, 8. I'm not sure exactly. I always forget their ages. They keep changing them on me. And every year had to do a presentation where she had to on famous people and so forth, biographies, that's what they're called. And she chose Grace, and she actually has to dress up as her and everything. And I am just so proud that the next generation is learning about these amazing people.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So what are some of your favorite cryptography stories?
Well, first of all, I'd like to set the record straight on, and I don't want to take anything away from Alan Turing's success and Bletchley Park team and what they did over there. But it should be mentioned that the Enigma was first broken by the Polish. A group of 3 Polish people were able to attack early forms of Enigma and come up with a method to decipher it. And this knowledge was then transferred to the British, and that's what kickstarted, I think, Alan Turing's and the Bletchley Park crew over there. But these 3 Polish people are, I think, frequently forgotten in the story, and I think they're heroes all the same. So
absolutely, it's amazing what watching your country get trampled over will do to your spirit and your will and ingenuity and creativity and all of a sudden, you're breaking codes by hand, and then you make computers to do it.
Can we bring that story up every time somebody says a bad Polish joke?
Absolutely. I'll do that from now on. You make a bad Polish joke, and I will hit you with these facts that I now need to research.
I'm going to hit you with my Enigma machine.
Absolutely. This was invented in Poland. Or broken by Polish people. I'll give you another one of my favorite stories. Too bad it was made into a crummy movie. The big reason that Lorenz and Enigma were broken is that in the end, they were based on the German language out the other end. So they knew that by looking at the string of code that somehow it came out as German at the other end. So the Americans fighting in World War II on the Pacific Theater used the Navajo language that had no alphabet, and they used it over the radio, and they used Navajo code talkers to talk in this weird language that the Japanese had no hope in any way of deciphering. And it worked really well, and it's a great story. It's just too bad they turned it into a crummy Nicolas Cage movie, so we have no real way to celebrate this really cool story.
But it worked in the X-Files too.
Well, yeah, the X-Files. There you go. There it is, but that crummy movie sort of takes away from this really, really, really cool story.
Well, you know, I was telling Mark that, and he was like, no way. And we were discussing
that same story,
and we were actually discussing a contest that we were thinking of, which I'll not describe completely because we're still thinking of it. We were thinking of having an Enigma code out there, taking our device and creating a code and posting it somewhere. And
offering a prize
of some sort,
to the first person to decode it.
And so we've got all these people talking about how easy it would be to break the code. And I'm like, really? So, you know, exactly what language do we think that we're going to put this code in? And, you know, because there's a lot of people that are pretty smart, you know, and there's software out there now to Brick WPA2 that uses video cards shaders as extra processing power.
And a dictionary.
Yeah, and a dictionary file. And so, you know, I'm like, you know, I can make a message that isn't necessarily in any particular language. And so even if they did decode it, they would look at the message and not know that they had the message, you see. And
I say Klingon.
Point.
Yeah, do the message in Klingon. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's exactly what we came up with.
There we go. Yeah. Now my listeners have an advantage.
Yeah, that's it. Now the word is out.
Well, now they have to decide, is it in Klingon or Andorian, you know?
There you go. But if I may, for a second, avec un petit français sur le bord du micro, je pense que je suis capable de deviner c'est quoi ton autre langue tu vas prendre.
Exactement, ben c'est sûr. Et j'ai tout de suite commencé à dire, ah ben c'est facile, on va mettre le message en français. On vient d'éliminer la majorité des Américains.
C'est ça. Un petit code pour nous autres du Québec.
Ben oui, aider un petit peu les Québécois et la communauté francophone.
We've got one listener from Quebec City that I'm sure is very happy right now and giggling her butt off. I have no idea what you guys said.
No, that's okay. No, we just discussed that, you know, there are French people involved in this and that it's another language there, but we have our own little geek community and we now have a leg up. But I still say go for it.
Well, that's all right. As long as the French nerds drink Unibrew products, the world will all be just perfectly in order.
So, James, do you have a favorite cryptography story?
Oh, not really. It's all very intriguing to me. I really am not a cryptologist or anything like that. To me, it was just a challenge to build this device, and I really, you know, have the cryptology that I've done, I really am not at liberty to talk about.
the cracking of web keys on neighbors, wireless access points.
Just to see if it could be done.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Let's see.
Am I going to have to, like, video edit redacted bars on this over your eyes?
Exactly, right? I'll supply my own.
There you go. All right.
Oh, wait. Can you do that one more time? I'm going to take a screenshot. Fantastic.
I think we have our cover shot.
I think we do. I think we've got our album art right there. That is great. Now, before I go on to my story, what James was talking about there, what he cannot discuss, reminds me of a story that you have. You were on course and you had either you or somebody else had paid for internet on course.
Okay.
Go ahead. You are better at telling stories.
A friend of mine had set up wireless internet in his room in the barracks while he was on this other base taking a training course. And he was letting other people, you know, he was subsidize his monthly internet fee. You could pay a couple of dollars a month and he'd give you the password and then you could jump on his, the web key. And then you could jump on his
Wi-Fi bubble.
His Wi-Fi bubble. Exactly. And this one day he gets a knock at the door and there's a guy holding a cell phone going, are you the guy with the wireless? Yeah. Why? Cause I cracked your web key and I followed you here. So I know it's in this room. So what's it cost to get on your internet? What do you mean you tracked it here? It's like, oh yeah, I got an app I made on my cell phone. I can track down Wi-Fi signal strength, so I know it's coming from this room, and I cracked your web key, so I'm already on it, but how much you want?
Cool. Yeah.
These guys are, I don't know. That's cool. Scary. Yeah.
That's basically one of the stories we can't talk about.
Yeah,
that we were alluding earlier. Absolutely.
Redacted. So one of my favorite stories is, and I'm sure I'm going to get details wrong, but it's the wall in CIA headquarters.
Oh, the statue.
Yes, the statue. And how long has that statue been there?
Oh, over 30 years now, I think. They built this statue inside the this little arboretum in the middle of the new CIA headquarters, and it's four panels, each one encrypted with a different cipher. And the artist gives a clue every 10 years on each panel, and he's letting people decrypt them as they go. One of the panels was decrypted by a guy at lunch doodling in a notepad. The other two were
The
other two were decrypted after the artist gave clues. They're all passages from famous books, and they all use variations of. I think the first two were substitution ciphers. I don't know what the third one is. The fourth one, it's been over 30 years. No one knows what it is yet.
And, really?
Yeah. And it's I cannot remember. There'll be a link in the show notes to the name of this this statue. It's all out there. You can take photos of it. You can see what like the code letters are and the ciphers that well not the cipher but the encrypted text is there. And then you get to try to break it. And big.
This is so cool. Make sure you do put a link to the International Charlotte Cryptology Symposium, because there's a lady that's going to have a talk during that three-day event that made it basically her life effort to decode that fourth panel that you're talking about.
Nice.
So she's going to be on location, and she'll be discussing her effort and how she's going about the her work. So.
Really
the Cryptology Symposium is going to be an interesting place to be. We're supposed to speak there, and I feel so unworthy.
We don't even deserve to be on the same grounds as these people.
You know, six months ago, we
knew nothing.
Nothing about the Enigma and its fascinating story in cryptology.
And then we decide we're going to have to make one, and then we start looking and researching Wikipedia and such, and the crypto, what is it, the crypto museum?
The enigmamuseum.com. Those two sites have been absolutely, a wealth of information for us.
Now, keep in mind, details. Guys, don't sell yourselves short, because if you remember, the first guys to fly an airplane were bicycle mechanics. Engineers, all of the famous multimillionaires who were trying to get into the air, Octave Chanute, I'm looking at you, got nowhere, and it was two bicycle mechanics from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, who got that plane into the air first. So the talented amateur, the maker movement in the garage is definitely showing strong, and you guys are keeping it strong. Congratulations on your success again, and good luck at the symposium. Good luck in the future.
All right, thank you, Ted.
Is there anything else you want to mention before we wrap up?
Well, I can give you a couple of names from the Crypto Symposium that are going to be there. People that.
All right, so we got to mention Mark and Paul, who have created 10 years ago or so the Enigma E. And the Enigma E is the first electronic version of the Enigma. And if it would have been available for us to order in October, then we would probably have ordered it, used it, and never had the need to create our own. And we wouldn't be there looking at an $80,000 Kickstarter potential. So, but these guys really created the first and proved that it could be done. And we just came after them and decided to make ours open, using an Arduino platform. And of course, there's Dr. Pereira in the US, who's a leading expert in the matter of enigmas and restoring them and collecting them and so on. So.
And there's going to be Debbie Desch Anderson,
who's the daughter of one of the famous American who created the American Bombay version. Will be there.
It was Joe Desch that was her father, who designed the Navy cryptic bomby. The Americans actually had one too. If you talk to some of the veterans there, they say, well, we cracked it, you know? the doctor, what was his name? There's going to be Ralph Simpson that's going to be there.
So Ilonka Dunin is the lady I was talking about who's working on the crypto sculpture at the CIA headquarters. So she'll be there.
Yeah. And Dr. Pereira, of course, who has the crypto museum, I think.
Yes, he's it. Enigma. The enigmamuseum.com here in the U.S. And so a funny story, if you allow me.
Of course.
We decided to sell one of our handmade enigmas on eBay. And so we put serial number one available, and we're asking $1,100. And suddenly I'm getting contacts saying you and now I put it in a test auction, so we make sure that all the documents were fine and the pictures were complete and everything. And I'm getting this email saying, listen, I have no interest in going into a bidding war, but this serial number one is mine. Please remove it from eBay, and we'll settle this later. And so, okay, so we replaced serial number one from eBay, put serial number 12 on eBay instead, sold number 12, and number one is coming with us next week for a very special Dr. Pereira. Don't know exactly how this transaction is going to go, but it's got his name on it.
Yeah.
Okay, that story wins.
That's cool.
And the reason we were selling 001 on eBay was is that 001 was actually the first production model and is not exactly, it's a production model, but it's not exactly like all the rest of them.
Right.
You know? And
being the first after the prototypes, it still bears some prototype
stuff.
Behavior, so.
But anyways, it functions and it does its thing and it crypts and decrypts and does what it's supposed to. It's just not exactly the same as the real production ones.
It's unique.
Yes.
It's a one of a kind.
It's a one of a kind. Yeah.
That is fantastic. Now you guys are a part of history. You guys are going in a museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
not bad for a couple guys from Georgia sitting in a garage.
I can tell you that build your own electric car. I'm pretty sure that one listener is going to be very excited about that. T. Morris, your next electric car, you're going to build it yourself.
We haven't figured yet how to deal with your Canadian winters.
Don't worry, this guy's in Virginia. He's fine.
All right.
Yeah, no electric cars in Canada.
Oh, it'll come.
All right. Well, thank you very much, both of you, Mark and James. You guys have been fantastic. Everyone, you can visit them at stgeotronics.com. Is that the correct address?
stgeotronics.com.
stgeotronics.com. I'm sorry. Where you can find all sorts of information. If you type Enigma into Kickstarter, you're going to find their Kickstarter. And if you go to nimlast.org, you can find all of the links that you need. And I'm sure they will also be on geeklew.com. Thank you so much for joining us for Nutty Bites and Epic.
Thank you for your time.
See you guys.
Bye. Bye.
It would seem another season of Tales in the Archives is upon us. Ugh. Dr. Sound must be under the impression we have nothing else to tend to down here. With a new season, we need to make a new promo.
Why not have our intern do it?
We have an intern?
Yes, Wellington. Catherine!
Good day, Eliza. How's it going, eh?
Lovely. Thank you for asking.
We have an intern? In the archives?
Any difficulties with my assigned tasks?
The compass retrieved from the ghost ship of Northumberland Strait keeps trying to reappear on different shelves, but I think I got it secured.
How did you do that?
Maple syrup. Sticky stuff, eh?
We have an intern.
Excellent. Welly and I were wondering if you have a moment to make a promo for us.
Oh, sure.
Tales from the Archives, Volume 3. The Steampunk Chronicle Reader's Choice winner and Parsec-winning podcast from Pip Ballantyne and T. Morris.
Oh, she's very good.
Subscribe for free through iTunes or at the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences website at ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com.
I say, Catherine, would you mind topping off my tea? There's a good lass.
Oh, tea, coffee?
Wellington, don't antagonize the Canadian. It's very rude.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlast Studios. You can find us at nimlast.org/blog. Contact. Feedback at nuttybites@nimlast.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it. Don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.
And here I stutter and stammer, and I make my wife do all the editing later, and she'll figure it all out, but...
Now for the bad news.
What's the bad news?
The bad news is we forgot to hit record.
No, that's okay, because on-air records anyway.
Oh, the on-air records anyway. Okay, yes. Then we are...
So once I hit record,
yes.
I'll just splice in the better audio.
Ah, okay, there we go.
We're all good. That's so why I use Hangouts.
I don't need to repeat
any
questions.
Don't worry, this will get edited out.
This will all get edited out. Thank
so
God.
So we have no bad news.
We have no bad news. We have good news. So if...
All right, just give me a second, and done.
There we go.
Oh, wait, got to do it again. And
bye.
I will stop the broadcast here.
Stopping broadcast. Stopping broadcast. Broadcast stopped.
Yay! Awesome, and I will...